So I would use this microphone. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to this conference session devoted to the nations around the world with the spin of the globe. We have five presentations for this session, two from China, one mixed one from Russia, Netherlands, and the Czech Republic, one from the USA, and one from Hungary. I would call our first presenter, Professor Guohua Dong, Director of the Center for Earth Observation and Digital Earth, COIDE, Deputy Secretary General of the Chinese Academy of Science in Beijing, and Secretary General of the Digital Earth. Professor Guohua Dong, the floor is yours.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Ladies, we have two ladies. How many? Thank you very much. How many gentlemen? 1, 2, 3, 4, oh, 6 gentlemen, including me, sorry. Well, so where is my slide? Let me see. No, Sharon, turn on my slide. So everybody have lunch. During they have lunch, we talk here. So don't let them know what I talk. We have the seventh gentleman come here. We have the Okay, the title of my presentation is a SEALED and a Digital Earth Science Platform. What's SEALED? SEALED is a Center for Earth Observation and Digital Earth, affiliated with the Chinese Academy of Sciences. So I just want to give you some information about what's SEALED, then give you some introduction about the Digital Earth Science Platform. Before that, I'll give you some overview about Earth observation in our country. But I think from Earth observation to digital Earth, this is a kind of background. I like to say recent 20 years in our country, we really have the quick development about Earth observation, including both the satellite-borne and airborne the sensors. So here you can see we have different kind of the space-borne remote sensing sensor, also including space aircraft. We call the Shenzhou space aircraft, also carry out some visible infrared and the microwave sensors. So this we call the satellite family in our country. Also, you can very quickly develop operational meteorological satellite. Also, in the end of this year, we will launch some kind of a new satellite, including environmental satellite and meteorological satellite and disaster mitigation satellite. So you can see how we can do work by using this observation technology, not only for the regular, the satellite, but also recently launched some small satellite. So here you can see even carried out by the space aircraft, we have the visible infrared sensor put in the space aircraft. So here also we can get some image. Not only for space-borne, but also for airborne. Recent years we developed a lot about this is the full wavelength sensors. So recent years, people, work for the Earth observation, but in the meantime, they realize that the digital Earth is so important. So recent years, we have the digital Earth, we have digital region, different country, different province, different city, etc. From the serious study to technical development and for applications in the different field. So in our country, really did a lot. So that means right now, not only we need an observation, but technology, but also a very important one, we need some, you know, digital earth technology application to do that, to serve for the country. So just, 3 months ago, Chinese Chemical Sciences have a decision to establish some new center, the center, what we call the SEALD, the Center for Earth Observation and Digital Earth. What's the SEALD? Here you can see, this is background. It's the non-profit research institute. It, the receiving, processing, archiving, and distribution, and also to supply the applications to the industry, to the different regions of the country. Also provide social services, and also human help, human beings better understand with the people in the world of our natural and the man-made impact of our planet Earth. So here is a kind of structure for SEALD. We can divide into four parts. The first one and for the satellite in the remote sensing center, and the second one is the Abram, the third one is the special data center, and the last one we have the lab of digital earth science. So divided into the four parts, it's, as a matter of fact, it's remote sensing and special data the flow, you can see. So for this satellite receiving satellite remote sensing center, actually, just 21 years ago, we Chinese established the satellite receiving station, receiving a lot of satellites. Here you can see, including land sense board, red set one, very few the red set two, Yars 1-2, Inmarsat, even India satellite, and MODIS and Seabirds. Seabirds is China Brazil Corporation Earth Resources satellite. And very soon we receive the disaster environment and satellite data. So we have a lot of data already. Here you can see, we have the receiving station already here in Beijing. We have a new station here and in Hainan Island of Southern China. Also we have in Western China another one. So three receiving stations can cover very big area. So we have the satellite family in the world. We can receive the more than 10 satellite data by our receiving station. And also, we have the airborne remote sensing center. Already, we have two remote sensing aircraft. But recently, our government have a decision we should, establish a new airborne remote sensing center. We should have a very new, very advanced new aircraft. We were, develop the 11 sensors from the visible infrared to microwave, sensors. So put all of the sensor into this the aircraft. So now we have the satellite receiving station. We have the four remote sensing craft. And we have the lot of the sensors. So we have the ability to receive so many observation data. So for this data, we should store in some place. And we established some the data center. You can see everybody here. You know that the data center not only do processing, archiving, but also do some value-added work. So we can get some high-level production for this kind of special data. And all of that space on airborne and a special data center. The purpose. So, what I really think in a long, long time, why we should develop the technology? Why should we develop some high tech remote sensing and earth observation technology? The only purpose, the unique purpose, just for applications for this kind of field. So, especially in the country like our country, developing country, big territory country, we really need this technology to serve for the country. So digital earth really have this idea to do some applications in a different field. But here, for digital earth, not only just do very simply for applications, but we should know what the digital earth. So right now, nobody says what's the digital earth definition. Nobody says so clearly. So we should study that. Study about the vision, study about the framework, establish some the model, and develop some the key technology, and use that for the different applications. So it's our kind of a mission for this seal. So the mission from this diagram, you can see in detail. Not only we just develop some theory and technology, but also serve, from the data to knowledge, serve for the public, the government, the international. So according to their requirement, we can develop some new technology and have some new innovation idea. So before that, before this, the center, already we have done a lot of work. Say you can see we already developed some digital earth prototype system 1.0 version. Use that, we already did a lot of applications. You can see this. And here we can see we call the prototype DEPS, including this 1, 2, 3, 4, the 7 components, the 7 subsystems. And also, we have the module about application model. So this model including for the environment monitoring, for disaster monitoring, etc. So we established really, integrated system. We call the ISDP 1.0. It considers 7 server systems. The first one, you can see, we called the data receiving and fast processing subsystem. The next one we called the grid computing subsystem. Also, we have the some the main data subsystem. We have some kind of mapping system, etc. So finally, also we have the one thing we call the virtual reality subsystem. So based on the work already we have, based on the rapid requirement for the society, for the nation. So we think for the next step, maybe we should build the ISD, the 2.0 version. But here we have the new name. I think it's better. It's the Digital Science Platform, DSP. So why do this? Now you can see should meet the national demands. We should, meet the national airspace developments. Already, we have some very strong background, including receiving, both the spacebound and airborne data. So, including we already have some kind of data. So now, what we should to do, do processing, then let the data become the information. Let the information become the knowledge. Let the knowledge become, really information that the decision makers can use that. So if we can establish the DSP, it's a really powerful tool for the decision makers. It's that our main purpose. But also, it's sure we should study for the do some basic research. Also, we need to develop some key technology. But all of this key technology and basic research study, the purpose is for development of the operational the DSP. That means the digital platform. So for this platform, we can see we have a system architecture from left to right, you can see what we are thinking. So finally, say again, the purpose of this platform to meet the nation demands. Well, for this digital earth sign platform, we can divide several parts to do that, to study. You know, the first one, we show the slide the theory and the model. The second one should start about the data sharing policy and the regulation. And we should start a standard specification of the data. And also we should form some kind of data acquisition system. So we need to develop a lot of the key technology. So including visualization system here in ISDTV, ISDV-DE5, we have see a lot of the visualization, especially for 3D visualization. But we need some develop some high performance scientific computation and information grid. And also we need the platform for geometric simulation and corporate. And we need some management system for Earth information base. So the what I said before, the main purpose for this platform is for applications. So according to our study, finally we have decide following 10 areas is for our next 5 to 10 years application areas. That means digital disaster mitigation, and digital health, and digital energy, and digital hydrology, and digital atmosphere, digital ecology, digital heritage, digital environment, digital ocean, and digital city. So it's our main field. But you can see each field is very, very big, very, very wide, the field. So for each field, we should focus very limited, directing to study, like disaster mitigation, maybe just the focus like the flood, earthquake, like digital health, many focus in China a lot of sandstorm. So the relation between the sandstorm and the local health, etc. So the government provide a lot to establish this platform. So not only we should do study, not only we need to incorporate local government and the industry to develop the applications field, but a very important one, we should serve for the society. So we should establish some service system. So this is including digital earth data, including all the service, including new information service, including special data sharing service, including digital earth information for public service, etc. So here you can see within China we have the 34 province autonomous region, and even like Hong Kong, the special region. So each the the province, the region, we should provide our special service. So according to the difference between the two, the different regions, like Western China, many we should study desertification. We should study about groundwater. We should study something about the global warming issues. But like in South China, so focus on the urbanization, focus on the population, etc., etc. So it's quite different, the application purpose. Not only serve for the country, for China, but for the purpose of study for digital earth. So I think every country have the duty, we should work together to build up the digital earth. The earth, it belongs to all of us in the world. So we should work together to develop our theory, the model, the technology to form the really Digital Earth, the global science platform. So let's work together. Let's share the data, share our digital science result. So let's establish some new future for all of us. So thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Professor Huadong, for your very impressive presentation. And there is time for one or two questions. Yes, Professor Ayo asked.
Yeah, good question. We have the plan, two versions. The one is Chinese, another one is English. Yeah, already prepared for this. Yeah.
So that is available?
Yeah, but not now. We just have the plan, yeah. But we have the plan to have the different language, yeah.
Yes, please. Please, you...
That's sure. So we do the application for the three level. The first one, we call the the local, that's the province, the cities level. The second one for the nation, and the third one is Earth, digital Earth. But we beginning maybe like the digital Asian, and from then on, so digital Earth. If you say the government to government, really we think, government should pay attention to this, but we should let the government, really to government, but we should study by our scientific community.
One more question?
Yes, I was wondering if the satellite imagery is available for international use for disaster response.
Already we have a lot of the satellite data, but right now, at least you can get two satellite data. The first one, meteorological satellite, we call the Fengyun satellite. And the second one, we call the Seabirds, China, Brazil, Earth Resources satellite. So now it's free. You can get it.
Thank you, Professor Huadong, for the answers. And now we move on. I would like to ask Professor Ehlers to warn me in 15 minutes that I have only 4 minutes left. Now at 2:45, please warn me that I have to finish in 3 minutes. Thank you. Before I start with my presentation, I would like to ask the audience that Professor Tikhonov or Professor Ormeling or Professor Milan Konechny is available because it has an impact on the duration of the presentations. Now, there is no show. In that case, we have three presentations. So I would like to share information with you on the present situation on the national agendas for the digital earth progresses in the case of Hungary. And the contributors of these presentations are from the European Commission, Alessandro Annoni, member of the board of the Digital Earth. He was unfortunately, due to schedule conflict, not able to come here. And Mr. Jelle Hilkema, former director of the FAO Remote Sensing Center in Rome, who is now SDI consultant for the United Nations. So because of the context, I would like to say three notices. The first is that practically all the information which are handled by Digital Earth Vision in the planning and implementation phase has inevitable spatial and temporal dimension, whereas the availability, the accessibility, and interoperable usability playing vital role. And this is the issue where, to meet these requirements, spatial data infrastructures had to be built and the related services worldwide. Now, this is underway on more than 100 countries, and the local to global, on a coordinated way, in some cases, in some continents, using common standards and along approved strategies. And this is where the multiple benefits of the SDI supported implementation of the Digital Earth Vision is anticipated also from three major application area: the investigation related to the global change, to the sustainable development, and from the information society perspective. So the content is focusing on the nation, the players of the nation, the framework, the regional perspective, in the case of Hungary, the European Union, and its legislation framework, which is related to the subject, the global perspective, the UN SDI vision, strategy and implementation plan, and going further into the national agendas, the components, the major components of the national agendas, and highlighting the case, application case, and the development case of Hungary, the strategies and implementations, finally conclusions. So in Hungary, there is an emerging framework between the academia, the governments, the industry, and NGOs, which are very much in line with which was said at the opening ceremony by Tim Forestman on Tuesday, that the Digital Earth supporters are coming from these areas. And now in Hungary, 109 member institutions and organizations are in this framework called Hunagi. Moreover, 48 student members and countrywide projects, project managements, and we have strong links on international, European, and global level. The operation is hosted and shelter is given by the Ministry of Agriculture and Regional Development. Parallelly, by the invitation of the UNGI Working Group initiative, Hungary became member of a pilot project, and it was also mandated by the National FAO Committee to join the UNSDI initiative, forming a Hungarian coordination office and assigning an acting coordinator. We had a kickoff meeting with 16 active stakeholders, and all the initiated actions were approved. And we had a meeting in early January hosted by the Meteorological Survey, and 1 week ago we had a third meeting devoted to the visit of the delegation of the SDI coordination in the People's Republic of China. So the stakeholders and partners are coming from the field again, which was described by Tim Forestman on Tuesday, from the major application field, from the Earth observation meteorology. So this is the upper the Earth surface. On the Earth surface related disciplines, the mapping, the environment, agriculture, renewable natural resources and planning areas, the major data providers and custodians, which provide service for the public, for the interagency cooperation, and for also for the industry. Stakeholders include also representatives of the subsurface dimension, the geoscience community, the Hungarian Geological Institute, but also the Transport Ministry and the Directorate of disaster management. The education capacity building, also an important point here. The international links I mentioned on European level, the working and advisory group for EuroGI, the European Umbrella Organization for Geoinformation, ongoing projects on European level, e-content related projects, where the e-content is geographic, the location oriented, the GSDI, the International Association, where the working group extension, recruitment, and case studies, the Hungarian community is involved with, and the GEO and COS, WGISS, the information services and systems. The digital earth have to be mentioned here. The Hungarian community is active since 2003 from Bonn, and we had an application for a bid for the ESDI 6 in 2009. We failed, but we hope anticipated involvement in the summit 2008 in Europe, in Germany, Potsdam. On European level, the Hungarian GI community is a so-called provide two MOs, these legally mandated organizations, having the opportunity to give feedbacks for the European Union decision procedure and also the spatial data interest community, which plays a role in projects like Humboldt and program like the GMES. And also in the academia and UN, we had an important role in the Planet Earth 2008 and also in the UNGI Working Group's UNSDI initiative, but also the FAO Regional Center, which will move to Budapest this year from Rome, serving Europe and Central Asia. The GI and remote sensing, the digital earth concept play an important role. Now I would like to not going into the details, but it is a very important development in Europe based on the last 6 year development, the INSPIRE Directive, which is a legislation framework now in force. And why this was developed, because it was a really need from the environmental sector for better information to speed up information flows and providing a platform for sharing of information across the regions. The environmental data had over 90% linked to geography, where the geographical location is important. The situation is Europe. Data policy restrictions are against the wider use of the data and the services, the lack of coordination on European and also on national level, the lack of standards, and the existing data not reusable, which are now based on the recent legislative development, a good solution providing the PSI directive, the reuse of the public sector information, and also the INSPIRE directive, which is actually the spatial information in the community, infrastructure for that. The INSPIRE is a legislation framework, and the general rules are that this infrastructure for spatial information in Europe is for serving the community for the policy planning, policy implementation, and policy controls. And this infrastructure shall build upon infrastructure for spatial information already established and operated by the member states. But INSPIRE doesn't require collection of new spatial data, even new electronic format, and INSPIRE doesn't affect intellectual property rights. It's important to mention. So the INSPIRE directive, a good policy must be based on sub knowledge, and it, in this case where the watersheds are related in Europe, the 70% of the watersheds belongs to or more countries, and it needs cross-border interoperable services and operations. Access for meteorological, hydrological, soil data, land use data, topographical data, and also other critical infrastructure-related data. The INSPIRE directives are generally very common also for the digital Earth concept, because they are optimizing the collection, management, and service of the data. Of course, the implementation rules are those which are describing the technological details. They are underway now. On the metadata, the interoperability of data sets and services, the network services itself for discovery, view, download, or invoke data, the data and service sharing, and last but not least, the coordination and measures for monitoring and reporting. There is a fixed roadmap. The development was started in the summer 2001, and it was approved early this year and in force since April 2007. Now, according to the roadmap, there is 2 years for every EU member states to adopt the new legislation into the national level legislation, and there is also a roadmap to implement all the programs till 2013. Some words about on global level. There is also a strategy for on global level, and which was elaborated by the UNGI working group in Addis Ababa, and actually this is also not a new initiative. It was a result of many years consultations and realizing an identification of the problems. And now this is this UNSDI initiative would like to support institutional and technical support to improve decision making for social, economic, and environmental development. This is a three pillar which is the most important from every respect, enhanced at all levels of the society and for the attainment of the Millennium Development Goals of the UN in space and safety. The background was started in the year 2000, and now in this year we had a global meeting hosted by the European Space Agency in Frascati, and tomorrow in New York it will be an important UNGI working group meeting addressing the UNSDI issue, the implementation phase of the strategy. The UN reform agenda is inside of the UN, how to facilitate the operation of the at least 30 specific agency within the UN where geographical information are playing important role, but also contributing to the UN Millennium Development Goals till 2015 in three major areas, in the first, seven, and eight, and also increasing the global governance. Some achievements so far, I would like to pick up here and highlight the GeoNetwork open source, which is de facto standard already, acknowledged by the GI community, including the OGC. And there is a close collaboration between the UNGI working group, UNSDI initiative, and the INSPIRE, because INSPIRE was the very first legislation framework which were elaborated on continent regional level which could be also applied or taken into account in another part of the world. And John Blue Prize will be established and announced later this year, which is for the excellence in the field of geo applications and geospatial data infrastructure building related developments and applications. Finally, I would like to again mention the UN Global Partner Meeting Dialogue and the Frascati Declaration, which is drafted, and maybe tomorrow in New York it will be announced officially. Now, the national agenda, some of the major components are listed here. The National Strategy on Climate Change, which is UN-driven, the National Strategy on Renewable Energy, the National Strategy on Sustainable Development, the Midterm National Economic Plan, according, in case of Europe, according to the budget line, the 7-year budget line of the European Union, and the Strategy on National Spatial Data Infrastructure. And there are also some directives within the UN, EU, which are reflected the subject. For example, the PSI, I mentioned already, the public sector information reuse, and the European Water Framework Directive. Now, in case of Hungary, the blue text are the response on these challenges. In the implementation, they are in different stages, but all are underway. Now, finally, I would like to highlight the real operational applications using GI and remote sensing and related services and technologies in Hungary, but not also only for Hungary, but also in some cases for cross-border applications. So this is the meteorology and part, which are related to the INSPI so-called thematic core data, or the operational use of the common agricultural policy, which is a very intensive GIS-based, including many important and very detailed countrywide data sets, from cadastre to land use. And this is the land cover operational program, which are in line with the European one in the scale 1 to 100,000, 1 to 24, 25,000, and also a one-decade land cover change and program. The disaster mitigation, the floods and the droughts are affecting Hungary very much and very frequently, so there is operational service available and the capabilities are available to give quick response for the operating authorities. This is the orthophotos. Hungary has 2 time series in year 2000 and 2005, full country. This is the environment and water application, where 2 or 3 major European directives and programs are driven the Hungarian developments. This is the territorial information system, which provides information, data, and services for 1,100 registered users, from the local governments to the governmental agencies, GIS-based. And the flagship institutions, the Institute for Surveying, Mapping, and Remote Sensing, which are responsible for the majority of the so-called INSPI core data in the Annex 1 and 2, the major commonly used data. And they are the listing for the availability and the evolution of the strategy for the national spatial data infrastructure, the which is drafted and ready since 2006, and now waiting for governmental approval in this year. The nature preservation is an important field. This belongs to the Ministry of Environment and Water. The biotopes and the technologies are used are very similar, which were present yesterday at this conference. The environment and public health. This is some allergic plants, which are very harmful, and shocking figures will come, how many people are affected and how much money are lost because of the sickness. And the technology is fully operational and using remote sensing data, ground truth, and GIS. The soil bonitation and land valuation, also using geolocational measurements and remote sensing and all the digital maps which are available in Hungary, including the digital cadastral maps in the scale 1 to 4,000 and 1 to 1,000. An interesting program is a five-country cross-border program on the Tisa River, where also a social dimension have to be mentioned, because 2 million people identified as most impoverished settlements living in illegal housing and so on. So this program will be discussed at the European Parliament in Brussels later this month. The capacity building is one of the most important pillars in the national spatial data infrastructure and also from the digital Earth point of view. So one of our flagship institute is the West Hungary University, which keeps close contacts with European and global partners. The collaboration with the media, I listed here some of the most important, and the most recent is the International Journal on Digital Earth. The conclusions. The conclusions are that the Digital Earth National Agenda general requirements in case of Hungary are on the way. The blue cross plus sign means the activities, the strengthness of the activities, with some notices where indicates that we have to do a lot, especially in the political to find a political champion which would also facilitate the stable financing on national level, but also the user involvement, feedback, including citizens, is important. So this is the final remarks. That you can download this presentation from this website, which is written here. And thank you very much for your kind attention, and congratulations to the People's Republic of China to win the venue for the next ISD symposium in Beijing. Thank you. Now I would like to ask our next presenters, Professor Buckland, Michael Buckland from the UC University, from here in Berkeley, to have his presentation, the Electronic Cultural Atlas Initiative, 10 years experience with geotemporal resources. Professor Buckland, the floor is yours.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My presentation will be in some contrast to these large, impressive systems that have been presented. 10 years ago, a group of scholars, mostly in the humanities, meeting in Berkeley, decided that the tools were not adequate for describing cultural and historical developments. Especially printed maps were incapable of showing changes over time. And largely, so have digital maps. So I'm going to talk briefly about this very informal international collaborating group, mostly scholars in the humanities and the qualitative social sciences, but also librarians and information technology people and others. The mission of this organization is a little grandiose, like its name, to transform education and research through better understanding of place, time, and culture. Now, at Digital Earth, I hear a lot about geotechnology, but the problem with geotechnology is that it's geospatial, and geospatial is a lot less powerful than geotemporal. You need time to understand culture. I'll present some of our recent works. The idea behind this is that the best strategy is not to collect data, but to use other people's data. Everybody is collecting data and storing it, so you might as well use other people's. This requires networks and some interoperability. One principle is that the difference between memorizing and understanding is that for understanding, you have to know the context of something. And the geographical context is important, and the temporal context is important, and the cultural context is important. And it would be nice if using resources that exist on the internet could be made as convenient as using a reference collection in a library. It's not that way yet. And so, as a design requirement, imagine you went to a museum at random and you picked an object in the museum at random and said, how can I find out what documents or evidence there is anywhere that relates to this document, this artifact, the same kind of artifact from the same place for the same purpose, who else is associated with it, and so on. And the same with documents. And we have found that a faceted approach of what kind of activity, what kind of thing, and where, and when, and who, and respecting that these are different from each other and require different tools, and especially making better use of existing metadata. Most databases, most collections are catalogued, edited, indexed, but very little use is made of the indexing and the metadata. There's all kinds of objects there. They can only become available if somebody collects them. And everybody's catalog is different and more or less not interoperable. And so where we have been working is in this area. What requires subject indexes and thesauruses, like the Library of Congress subject headings? And this has special requirements for cross-references between related terms, not only within the thesaurus, but more importantly, between different thesauruses, a very neglected area. Where? You need maps. And place name gazetteers can be thought of as a kind of bilingual dictionary between place, a cultural concept, and space, a physical construct. Similarly, with when. If you listen to how people talk, they do not use chronological dates. They say, before Digital Earth, after I graduated, when I was in Hungary. It's like place names. These are situated cultural references, and they need the same kind of treatment. So we have developed what you might call a period gazetteer. And then you have biographical dictionaries, who's whose. Now, how to distinguish between different people with the same name or situations where one person has multiple names is well understood. But the best practices for marking up and studying biographical narrative is very neglected. Here's an example of a language problem. If you want kung fu films at the Library of Congress, you used to have to ask for hand-to-hand fighting, Oriental in motion pictures. Who would think of that? But if you did know that, it doesn't work anymore, because now they say martial arts films. Now, an automobile. These are the codings for automobile in four different U.S. federal databases. Very difficult to imagine. And here's one. It's difficult to tell what this is. Actually, it's a federal commodity classification system representing computers. It doesn't use the word computer. So a real problem is the way to map between these unfamiliar vocabularies, between the searcher's own words, your words, my words, and these systems, and then between the systems. For where, we have, fortunately, a well-established tradition of place name gazetteers, and so you can go from maps through a gazetteer to the name and then on beyond. This was a little interface we developed, which was fronting a library catalog and a place name gazetteer. Most books on folklore are about folklore in some place. So you do a search on folklore, you get a list of books, but the interface looks at where the book is about, goes to the gazetteer, finds the latitude and longitude, and then puts them on a map. Like that. And then you can click on any one of these to find the documents about folklore in Hungary or wherever. And you can go in the other direction. If you wanted to do a search on mass transit, for example, in capital cities of South America, and maybe you're not sure of the names of all the capital cities in North America, you should be able to draw a box on a map and say, find capital cities, principal populated place, go, and here is the list, and then you can use these to go and search in a catalog or a bibliography. A time period directory. Culture is dominated by events and changes, and there's not yet sufficient tools to deal with this. So we created a time period directory. It's really an event directory, and you can drill down through the centuries. 13th century. What happened in the 13th century in different countries? Well, there was the Yuan dynasty. We'll come back to that. The Czech Republic. The Mongol invasion, 1242, in Moravia, the Czech Republic. A little bit of an anachronism here. And in Denmark, you had the reign of Erik Glipping. Now, these icons take you to sources. If you click on this, it goes to the Library of Congress catalog. Click on that, it goes to the Wikipedia, like this. And here's an entry. They've changed it from glipping to clipping. And here's a biographical sketch. It's full of people and places and times and events. And it has links, but these links are within the Wikipedia. What you really need is links that go outside the Wikipedia to the rest of what's on the internet. That's what we're working on now. Now, it's also worth noting that although there are tools for what and where and when, in practice they're more complex, because a good subject heading would be concerned with the novel in Japan in the 19th century or in GIS in China in the 21st century. So typically you'll have a topic, you may have a geographical qualifier and a temporal one. And a good place name gazetteer has the name of the place, what kind of a place, Budapest, capital city, latitude and longitude, and it should, but rarely does, say when was that name in use. There was a time when Buda was Buda and Pest was Pest, and now it's Budapest. And a period name, which might be a reign or a plague or a war or a dynasty, lots of dynasties in China, what kind of a period, and you have time markers, and you need to say where. If somebody says, when was the Neolithic period, the only good answer is, what part of the world are you talking about? And so, you see, these are related. They're connected. They're connected. And more interesting, these are connected. Because Budapest is a place, but it's also a capital city, so it's a kind of a place. And if you know that, you could then go to the Library of Congress and say, what do you know about Budapest? Or, what do you know about capital cities? If you've got these connections. So, the design goal is that any object, any document, any performance should be connected with every other one, and this seems a good structure to do it. We designed a search interface to explore these ideas, and I will show you some examples of what we did. Somebody says, I want to know about Genghis Khan. So you put in, whoops. Now the problem is that this is not really a familiar wording. So you need a mapping between vocabularies. So you put this in, and the first thing we provide is a way to relate this to headings that exist in the Library of Congress catalog. And what you find is that this doesn't exist. It's actually a different transliteration for our old friend Genghis Khan. This is a ranked list of headings that are statistically associated with this phrase. It may be spurious, it may be a synonym, it may be many things. And these buttons here are places where if you pick one of these and you click one of these, you can go find more. So, for example, explains one of these. These are people's names that were in some way connected with Genghis Khan. So if you want to know about the world of Genghis Khan, here are some candidate peoples that there's some evidence were associated with him. And here's a period. Now, there's a problem here because that says Mongol and this says Mogul. Is this a misspelling? Is it the same? Is it different? We need a little orientation, some navigation. So we can click on here and then say, explain where this fits into the rest. And the Library of Congress catalog says, well, that's our heading, and it's a subset of India history, 16th century, 17th century, and these are similar terms, variant spellings. What do you want to do? Well, you could go and search the Library of Congress. Oh, sorry. And they've got 775 things about the Mongol Empire. The first is in Gujarati, so perhaps not today. Google will give you a huge list. The Wikipedia gives you an article. Note it's spelt differently. This looks promising. It tells you that it has to do with Hindustan. Well, where's Hindustan? The problem with a lot of this GIS system is that they give contemporary boundaries. To understand Hungarian culture, you need to know the changing boundaries of Hungary and all the local subdivisions. And I hope in your intergovernmental activities you will encourage the European and other countries to do the historical geography of changing boundaries. You can't do history without it. It's been done in Britain, which has a very unstable local government structure. There's work in Germany since 1820 and in Belgium, but mostly it's not available. So let's take a closer look at this. Here we are. Mostly it's the Indian subcontinent, known as Hindustan. So let's find out more in our interface. We have different options. We can browse by region and drill down to it. We can browse lists of states of the US, major cities of the world, and countries. and that'll take us. We can do a temporal search, drilling down by time, or we can use our good old friend a map. So we zoom in on the map to South Asia, and what you normally can't do, you want to specify the time period you're interested in. You're not interested in contemporary India or prehistoric India. We're interested in the Mughal Empire region. And you select it, click. So now we're situated in the 15th century, and we have two options. We can learn generally about that area, India, and then we can look for historical events, periods, art, architecture, specifically relating to the period. Well, we'll start generally. Now, the point here is that this link takes us not to the Wikipedia home site, but straight to the page. The true facts from the CIA. The British facts from the BBC. Learn about Gujarati. And a very nice natural history thing which has animals in it, like that. The point here is that most sites are not hospitable to allow people to go to the proper page. You can do it with so-called federated search techniques, if they're accepted, and you can do it with highly structured URLs, but most websites don't do that. Now then, our little directory didn't have much on historical events for that period, but we have a person, Babur. The Metropolitan Museum has a wonderful, wonderful website, and an important part of it is that it has this timeline by place and time, and if you know the website and it has a little code, you can put in a link that goes directly to the part of the timeline you're interested in. That's how it should be. This is a local Berkeley slide collection of architecture that you can search by time and place. And our organization specializes in cultural atlases. The word atlas is an irregular plural. One map is a map, two maps is an atlas. Here's one on the Begram ivory and bone carvings in present-day Afghanistan. Another has to do with a big archive of Buddhist and related art. Another had to do, we made a cultural atlas of the Silk Road. And here's the Mongols again. Could I have the, let's click on that, if we could have a video. These lines are the routes of the Silk Road, and that's the boundaries of the Mongol Empire going through time. Now think about that in relation to static maps of government boundaries. And then some events will occur here, listed here. I didn't make this, it was colleagues in Australia. Watch the blob, it is like science fiction. Genghis Khan unites them, they conquer the Tatars. Attack the Qin Empire. Whoops. Off to the Czech Republic. Conqueror Korea. Conquest of Mesopotamia and Syria. Now, what I want to be able to do, attack an eventual conquest of the Song in China. What I want to be able to do is to have a video like this and stop it at any point and point to any point and say, what do we know about this place at that time? Any aspect, climate, geography, history, culture, whatever. That's what I would like to see. Collapse, retreat, they're going to be a bit shaky in China. Collapse of the Yuan dynasty. There it goes. Think how difficult it would be to describe this without a dynamic map. Understanding means knowing the context. Go geotemporal, not geospatial, and create links. There's a lot of stuff out there. The Electronic Cultural Atlas Initiative is concerned with advancing scholarship through increased attention to place and time. We've had some funding. Come join us at our next conference. Our last conference was last week in Moscow. The conference before that was at Fudan University in Shanghai. And our next, come back to Berkeley in October. We'll have good weather for you. And then the next one will be in Perth, Australia. Thank you.
Thank you, Professor. It's the most exciting presentation. If anybody has a question to the subject, the temporal dimension and the importance of the time. Yes, please.
I don't think so, no. We're still using chronological and dates. I mean, dates and the names of periods. I should explain that unlike some other speakers, we do this fueled by enthusiasm rather than money. The total employed staff is less than one person, and retired people like me who get enthusiastic and spend our time on it. Membership, there's no formal membership, so it's free, so join in.
Thank you. One more question.
What was the source of data for your beautiful map of the Mughal Empire, and what system was used to create that map we saw, or the map showing the
temple? I ought to have the answer, but I regret that I don't. It's an AVI file. I suspect that there's some fairly reckless extrapolation or interpolation involved. It was done at the University of Sydney several years ago. I regret I don't know any more than that. But I use it because it's a nice illustration. Yes, come to our website, download it. Yeah. Good.
Thank you once again. And last but not least, I would like to invite Professor Li Deren of the Wuhan University, member of the Chinese Academy of Science, to deliver his presentation on what Vision Cruiser and TM can do for digital Earth. Is the title of the presentation of Mr. Li Deren, who is very active since many decades, especially in the ISPRS, International Society for Photogrammetry and Remote Sensing.
Mr. Chairman, ladies and gentlemen, it's my honor to be here to give my short speech. My talk today is dealing with how can we improve the quality of the digital Earth. And everybody knew through the Google Earth, also the virtual Earth from the company Google and Microsoft, we have get a lot of applications. But my talk today is what can Vision Cruiser, this nanobone sensor instrument, can do for digital Earth. And first one, I want to say, what is the digital Earth? But during this time, I didn't find the real definition of the digital Earth. Now I try to give my vision. Digital Earth is the visionary concept popularized by the former U.S. Vice President Al Gore for the virtual and 3D representation on the Earth that is specially referenced and interconnected with the digital knowledge archives from the around the planet with the vast amounts of scientific, natural, economic, and cultural information to describe and understand the Earth, its system, its environment, and human activities. For what? For a long life and a peaceful Earth. That's my vision. Digital Earth relate to such supporting technologies like scientific calculating, mass storage, remote sensing, wideband wireless and wireband network, the interoperability and metadata, and so on, in which the virtual reality, geospatial information system, and the internet are three foundations of digital Earth. Look like this. And nowadays, we are thinking about the Web 2.0. Web 2.0 is a revolution advocating open participation and creativity. It symbols the liberation of human nature, answers that call of individuation. Web 2.0 is a people-oriented network. Web 2.0 turns users from the being passive to become initiative, from the users to become the creators. So, thinking about these requirements and the challenge and the chance, I think we will find what is the main function of the digital Earth. I give here four basic functions. For example, if we do the location-based service, we can find that there are so many different requirements. For such people, they ask, where is this facilities? They want to look for that. For the environment people, they want to know the environment and these objects. And for the transportation people, they want to know such symbols to make us very safety the transportation. For the business people, they want to choose the good site to know the environment. How can we build our shop? For tourists, they want to know if this around is good for the sightseeing. So in that case, we need the third dimension, the vertical picture into the digital Earth. So in that case, we need not only research, but we want to search ever, but we want to sharing the demands of our customers, including the search ever, visual ever, measure ever, and the mining ever. So that's my thing. If we work for the Web 2.0, there are so many requirements from the end user. We have to provide with our digital Earth with searchable, measurable, measurable, and mineable. So we have to use these tools. And in this case, I think if we put not only airborne spatial imaging, but also landborne imaging put together, we can get more benefit. Now I will explain you what is the visual vision cruisers. How do vision cruisers work? And the vision cruisers can provide the four functions of the digital Earth. I just give very short examples. This system produced by our university, the small company in China, I founded it. And the system integration, the geodetic quality GPS, digital stereo cameras, and initial navigation system that are mounted on a NAND wafer like this, and use this system because we have here the GPS and the initial navigation system. Then we can get the georeference, the six parameters for each pictures we can get. Then from the CCD or the video, we can get a lot of pictures around nearby the ground. This is most like the human being activity in this style. So in that case, we can use this combination with the map, air photograph, satellite imaging. Use this system, we can set up this true map on the web. This is our true map on the web. In this, you can find, if we want to search the point of interest, we can search now, what is your hotel? Just type your hotel name, tell you, this is your hotel. And located here. Then if you said, I will invite you for the dinner, then to type the restaurant. Then we can search the restaurant. So this is a restaurant. This is here, nearby your hotel. And this is a location. If you see the picture, you can easy by the car to find the place. Also, of course, you can also get this, the panorametric images for the search. Like this is only in the CCD vertical. But also at the same time, we can give you the panorametric images like this, good view. So this imaging is similar to the human being eyes. So that's easy to understand. If compared with airborne, spacebound images, that's easy to understand. Use this principle, we can put this onto the web, like here. That is a map also of the imaging. Then you want to search some place, you just keep this. Then tell you, you want to search McDonald's, then get this is McDonald's. You want to search some the important the fire office, then you can find here. So even some object you cannot put into the computer, you can make annotation by yourself, like this shop. They sell cell phone. They cannot put into the system. Then you can type here by yourself. Then it's automatic uploaded to the system. So it means the annotation and identification can use this imaging by the end user. Everybody can help the system to set up more information to the web. And also, if you want to see, this is the image and also the terrain model. But this is the very important running way in the West China, Tibet running way. There's nobody maintains the system. But use this, the pictures, stereo pictures, you can see, if you go through these roads, you can see the environment. For this project, this is also similar pictures through the Yangtze River at my city. You can see the detailed environment from the web. So use this method, we can also, from the small town, we can through this imaging to set up the virtual city in the 3D. This generated by these images. This is just said, this is the Qingzhang, this is Tibet train, the running way. This is total now is more than 2,284 kilometers. We send a car, go and back for 7 days. The processing data is 10 days. Then we just set two operators, finish this information extraction. Yeah. Then in this area, the environment was very difficult, too high. The average altitude is above the sea, more than 4,000 meters. and the temperature is below 30 degrees Celsius. So this is a very difficult environment, but we just use the van put onto the train. And after that, we can measure any signals you want, like here. If you want to measure these signals, you just click here. Then click here. Behind the automatic matching program can help you to get the coordinates X, Y, and Z. Then put this point into the map. Everybody can do this. This is show you even the end user can measurement by themselves. Like in these scenes, you want to measure the distance from this top to the ground. You just click here, then get the results, the distance. This is not by photogrammetry, but this is by end user. Anybody can work on your terminals. So this shows you if you are working on the highway, you can measure road width and any object height you want. The accuracy for this measurement is 5 to 10 centimeters. The absolute accuracy is less than 1 meter. That is good for any applications. So, of course, if we have the every 10 years, we go to the city, has the images, put the temporal data together, can help this professor to do cultural, historical, social analysis, use the different time, the images. So this is some examples. If we have the world imaging, the new imaging, we can do automatic road reconstruction updating. We can automatic updating. This also, if we put our GPS and CCD on the train can do the observe and analyze the vegetation along the rails, because China has to increase the speed from now 100 to 200, 250 kilometers per hour. You have to keep the security on the way. Use this very small instrument, then can get this goal. Also can do emergency response, use this system. So in that case, normally we are use the air photograph, the remote sensing imaging to set up the map, autophoto, and the 3D view, and we use this van can get up another information. We put this together. Then we set up our new databases. One example is we have worked in Guangzhou City in order to help the ITS people, intelligent transportation people, to improve the information. They wanted to measurement so many signals with their attributes information from the traffic signs, the traffic lines. The major measurement is difficult. Then we use this van around Guangzhou City. Then after 1 month, we get all results. We measurement the routes almost together, more than 4,000 kilometers long. Then we get every signal, signs, and also lines. So we get, this is very easy. So use this concept, we develop our similar Google Earth system. We say this is the GeoGlobe. But with the measurable evidence from our lab at Wuhan University. Now you can see a little demonstration here. This is our city here in Wuhan City, the Yangtze River is our city. Then this is the quick bird imaging, 0.6 meter from America. This is the one street. Then if you want to catch the vertical image, then automatic get this. Because the geocode, through the geocode, we can connect both very easy together. If you want to go through this street, then we can give you the good information. Like now you can see, cross this street, you can see the front imaging, the left imaging, the right imaging, together with the satellite imaging, give you more information. You can understand what is this object, this object. What is this side, just this object. So that is give the people more easy understand information. Even if you want to do measurement, you click one imaging. I provide you two-stair pair, this photogrammetric, the intersection. You can measure the width of the road by yourself, and you can get results. Now you get your results. So if you're interested in the house, want to know the height of this building, then you can measure by yourself. This follow the Web 2.0. The normally, any GIS measured by operators in the number. But I want to give this environment to the end user. Everybody can measure what they want on the web. So this is some examples. So because of the time, I just to say my best ideas. We are just working in Beijing for Olympic Games. We can provide the people on the mobile phone to tell you what you get of the Olympic building. You can, with your ticket, find the correct gate into the stadium. We are doing now Beijing, Hong Kong, Wuhan, Shanghai, the major, larger the city in China. So my conclusion is very, very easy, very, very simple. The digital measurable image collected by the mobile mapping system provide a promising prospective GIS application and geo services. So the integration of digital measurable imaging from the mobile mapping with the normal digital animation model, digital orthophoto, and the digital line graphics, and the digital raster graphics must be very valuable for digital Earth. The information can reach to the centimeter accuracy resolution. Also the easy, the no cost, not so need many work like Microsoft. They have to work from the helicopter imaging. But we don't need to do any measurement. Just provide the original data put to the web, connect with the digital map, with the air photograph, also the satellite photographs. So I think this is one simple solution to push the application of the digital Earth for the human being, the life. That's my talk. Thank you.
Thank you, Professor Luderan, for the interesting presentation. This subject, which is very promising from the geospatial community, and especially from the intelligent transport systems,
yes,
this is real has a real promising future. Any question, please?
Thank you. Thank you. And I also visited Google Earth discussed with the CTO Mike Jones 2 months ago. And we also want to enlarge our work. We have already 10 vans in China. we can transport this van to everywhere to measurement this easy, the street imaging in the stereo pairs, then provide to the everybody. Thank you.
So we are end of this session. I thank you very much for all the presenters and for the audience for your participation, active participation, and the session is closed.